Welcome to Spark Your Fire Podcast, sparking your interest in Australian property and finance. Here's your hosts, Jazz and David.
G'day everyone, welcome back to another episode of Spark Your Fire. I'm your host, David Shee. And I guess at the moment, a lot of people are asking, what's happening with the Western Australia market? And it's one of those things that, you know, Jazz and I are kind of like both Eastern Seaboard, so we're a bit miles away from it, and a lot of our investor clients being asking, is it actually a good time to get into Perth, given the fact that they've been on a downturn for so long? And for that reason, that's why we thought we want to bring on a special guest today, someone from Western Australia who's got that authority and got that, got that, I should say, credentials, or, you know, to be able to make a bit more comments around what's currently happening in WA, and also share with our listeners a bit about what actually has happened behind the scenes, because everyone knows that WA is on a downtrend, but certainly if you're not on the ground, there's a lot of things that you couldn't pick up. So I guess that's a bit of a long-winded introduction, but let's not delay any further. We've got Gavin Hegney from, I think your company is Gavin Hegney Property. Is that right, Gavin?
That's right, yes. Valuer by trade. Been in the Western Australian market now for probably too long, 30 years, which has given me about three or four cycles now.
And, well, I'm sure no one else is more than qualified enough for you to be able to come in on that then. So, you know, welcome to the show. And again, you know, we'd like to, Jazz and I definitely would like to extend a very, very warm welcome. And I don't want to forget my co-host as well. Jazz, are you joining us today?
No, I was thinking of just hanging up. I thought you
come on. We were waiting on you to call in from the beach, and I, you know, I was just waiting on that waiting tone. So, no, it's good to have you on the show, mate. As always.
Thanks, David. G'day, Gavin. How are you?
Yeah, fantastic. Thanks, Jazz. Really good. Oh, I've got the sun shining over here in Western Australia, so the property market might be not that great, but the sun's out anyway.
We already have got a battle going on sort of between Sydney and Melbourne. Do you really want to go there and let's bring W into the picture as well?
I can remember writing about the Perth market when we sort of went up by 90% sort of in the lead up to 2007, 2008. And it was rocketing along, and Sydney and Melbourne were sort of languishing. And everyone, what I've learned is that every city has its day in the sun, for sure.
No, that's really true. Actually, that's a good segue into the property space, Gavin. Let's start with 2007-2008. I mean, we obviously want to know what's currently happening in the market and what the future is looking like for WA specifically. The last time property market saw some real gains in real terms were around that 2007-2008 mark?
Yeah, look, a lot of areas, a lot of suburbs haven't really seen any growth for since then. So that's over 10 years. But our overall market has been in a downswing since probably the middle of 2014, so 5 years now. And that's sort of, you can understand how, therefore, everyone that's bought in the market over that period hasn't got any equity growth other than the amount they paid off their mortgage. In actual fact, a lot of the times they've had actually equity taken out of their property in a falling market. So you can imagine today with people trying to refinance, for instance, there's just not the equity. So they're stuck on interest rates that are sitting interest rates, and they can't refinance down to the lower rates, and they not a lot of room to move also.
Yeah, see, that's interesting. Normally, the general theory of the market is that when the rates drop, property price, that leads to some increase in the property prices in one way or the other. And Perth is really a good example, which didn't resonate with the rates that well. It didn't shoot up in prices at all, actually, whereas we have seen, I don't know, how many rate cuts now since the Perth downturn started. I think when the downturn started, the interest rates were, the cash rate was around 4-5%, which means the interest rate, actual customer rate was around 6.5%. Now we are talking in high twos. And that hasn't really kicked off the Perth market. Do you want to go into a little bit of what will really trigger the new cycle of Perth market?
Yeah, look, it's a really interesting question, particularly the last part of that question, Jazz, because about 40% of the suburbs in Perth now are cheaper to buy than rent. Now, can you imagine if that was the case in Sydney or Melbourne? What do you think would happen? You'd think that, you know, buyers would pile in out of the rental market because if we've got two choices, we either rent or we buy, and they'd be buying with their ears pinned back. But it's not happening in Western Australia. And, you know, when we sort of look at a downturn, more changes in a downturn than just price. And when we went into the downturn, people's views were, we must own our own property. We want to own our own property. It's almost with the loss in values, which have been quite significant. We've had values drop by up to 50%. You can imagine that scares the life out of people. The last thing I want to do is turn around and buy in a falling market particularly. So you can imagine that now people are perhaps that little bit more comfortable to rent. So hence, people are renting. And the vacancy rate has come from over 7%, and it's down now around 2.5%, 2.6%. We've had a significant drop in our vacancy rate, and the last time the vacancy rate was at this level, rents were 30% higher as well. So, you know, we've got a market which has been a real roller coaster and it's polar opposite to perhaps the Sydney and Melbourne markets.
Is it fair to say that the Perth market is not really connected to anything else except the mining? Doesn't matter where you are in WA, because the last boom cycle that we saw in the WA market was directly related to mining, unless I'm wrong.
Yeah, we had mining, but we really had a construction boom in Western Australia, because we had the mines being built up in the northwest, in Karratha, Port Hedland, South Hedland. We had a lot of the construction workforce flying in, flying out of Perth. But we also had some significant infrastructure projects on the go in Perth as well. Things like, you know, the Mandra train line, you know, the Perth Stadium, you know, Elizabeth Quay, all of those projects were active. And so there was a lot of employment, and then everything stopped together. And on top of that, we then had a lot of people say, well, things are looking good in Sydney and Melbourne, and people left the state and went to Sydney and Melbourne. So we had a massive turnaround in a very short period of time. So you can imagine that. And of course, we had a supply in the pipeline of 32,000 properties, which we're currently at less than half that level now under construction. So, you know, it's taken a while to absorb that oversupply which has been created. And it's that's been pretty well the story of the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, but is it fair to say that oversupply was created due to the mining boom to some extent?
Yeah, mining boom was certainly a factor in there, certainly. And people, and what happened? Interesting, the mining boom is a catalyst. So, you know, people were losing their receptionist to going clean dongers in the northwest, because someone who was doing that might have been paid $100,000 a year, and as a receptionist, they were only earning $50,000 a year. So we had this real pressure on wages, and there was some big money out of the mining side, which tended to force everybody else to lift their wages. And it was a very difficult time to run a business in Perth, because the wage explosion and the capacity for higher wages out of the mining industry meant that everybody had to pay higher wages, but the businesses didn't make much profit as a result. So it was a pressured time. So it was a catalyst, and but we had a perfect storm there. We also had the Western Australian government spending money to, you know, improve the because we had basically in the space of about 3 years, I think we had something like 450,000 people moving to the state. So all of a sudden we're having to build new hospitals, and we're building new schools, and we're building all the infrastructure that comes with such a population explosion, only to have that construction workforce sort of walk out the door when the project's completed, no new projects underway. We had the GST walk out the door. We had 30 cents in the dollar of GST. So we had it all happen at the same time. And this is not I'm not crying into my Skype here, don't get me wrong, because we just had a massive boom in the lead up to that. A bit of a perfect storm for WA, and mining was certainly there as a catalyst.
And we mentioned just before, Gavin, obviously we have seen a lot of rate cuts since then, right? Where do we see the Perth market? I mean, you study the market pretty closely, and you're a property valuer as well, by trade. Where do you see this market headed now in the next few years, both from an investor's perspective and for people who are renting in the state and want to maybe think about buying their home? Is there a worry of that there still will be more negative equity to come, or which means the prices will drop even further? Or are we starting to see a bit of a turning point here?
Well, it's actually, you know, to put a line through and say one market, we've got extremes at the moment. So we've got about 13,500 people at a fairly high risk of defaulting on their mortgage right now, which is over 3% of mortgage holders. That's about double the average for Australia. So if we had half of them actually default in the next 12 months, then that would constitute about 30% of our sales. Now, if I said to you 30% of the sales in any capital city were forced sales with over-anxious sellers, not so anxious buyers, what do you think would happen to price in those areas? You'd see a significant drop in price. So that's one extreme. And that tends to be sort of the areas, perhaps a bit more outlying areas, newly developed areas, not so much near city, but fairly consistent across a number of suburbs. So that's the downside. And foreclosures in property over the last 3 years are up about 40%. So, you know, that's the downside. The upside is, well, it's cheaper to rent than to buy. So there's certainly upward pressure on rents and yields in a low interest rate environment, importantly, and that's the significance of interest rates, is that it's, you know, you're getting yields around Perth net in around low fours. So you, for an investor, there is no such thing as negative gearing in some of these areas. You're positively geared from day one, to the point where, you know, there's just been a public company just gone out and bought a portfolio of 84 homes, just four bedroom, two bathroom homes across a range of areas, and they're netting net, you know, 4.3% net. So that's the sort of the thing that's happening at the same time, as well as the mining has created wealth, and there is a couple of people around buying top-end homes and paying breakout prices for those top-end homes. So, and that market is pretty strong. Cheap interest rates, a lot of money in people's hands, paying breakout prices, and blocks of land in prime areas that might have been, you know, 18 months ago probably worth $3.5 million, today probably worth $4.5 million, arguably $5 million. That's the sort of level of growth there's been in these tight supplied prestige areas.
Yeah, that's interesting because I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, Gavin, my understanding of the Perth market in terms of the rental yield we're probably talking about like within 10 kilometers of CBD is actually quite poor. I think we're talking about gross rental return of less than around the 4 to 5%. That's my understanding. So I'm very interested to know, like, whereabouts are you talking about where you can actually achieve the net rental return of 4.4% plus? Are you talking about like a middle ring to outer ring, or like a regional area, or what sort of area are we looking at?
Definitely the Perth area, but the middle to outer ring is where the yields are highest.
Okay.
And it's almost a case of people that are living in those areas that are struggling on their mortgages, et cetera, and they can't refinance their loans because they're already in negative equity. You know, just about, you know, walk away, throw the keys over, walk away with no equity, but they want to stay in the area because their kids are at schools, et cetera, and the only other option they've got other than being homeless is to rent. And so they sort of looking to rent, but they can't refinance their loans. So they might be paying fives and high fours on the interest rates, as distinct from being able to refinance into the new, you know, entry level deals with, you know, low threes or even maybe high twos, you know, that are perhaps even on offer. So they just don't have the equity. There's no equity. In actual fact, they're negative equity. They can't, you know, some of them are selling it and saying, well, if I sell my home, I've got to chip in $50,000. So that's the areas where the rental market is probably strongest. And it's complete reverse to what you'd expect, which is normally the rents are strongest in the near city areas, because that's where the renting population tends to be.
So what do you reckon is the sweet spot at the moment, like around what sort of distance from CBD? Are we talking about 10, 15 kilometre kind of range, or...?
Yeah. Look, I think the sweet spot is very patchwork. I wouldn't put just a ring around.
Okay.
So, for instance, you know, western suburbs, you know, there is areas like Cottesloe, prime real estate's had a bit of a breakout price. But the next suburb along, perhaps into like City Beach, is probably undervalued to the tune of, I don't know, between 10 and 20%. It hasn't had a lift. So it tends to start in one area, break out in prime real estate and move its way out. At the same time, there's been some strong prices in Florey, which is just inland from City Beach. And that also suggests that City Beach would be undervalued. But the sweet spot there is probably City Beach as a node. If you went sort of south, you'd probably find, as a generalisation, the ring might be somewhere around 8 to 10 kilometre mark. If you went north, the ring would probably be somewhere around 8 to 12 kilometre mark. So a suburb like Kareen, for instance, very strong at the moment. But you could go two suburbs over and it's in a world of pain. It's very, very patchwork, which is classic of both the top of a market and the bottom of a market, because the market doesn't sort of operate in absolute unison. And it's almost like, you know, in a really strong market, how do you pick the next boom area? Well, it's easy. It's the suburb next door of the last boom one, because people catch on and they go, well, hang on a minute, why am I going to pay $1 million there when I can go over here and buy for $850? And they jump over and all of a sudden, you know, lo and behold, it rises accordingly. Yeah, even $650.
Like an ugly duckling type of suburbs that's next to the main key hubs.
Yeah. So in a downswing, it tends to be, you know, a little bit of activity, a couple of breakout sales of prime real estate. People get a bit of confidence in that area, but you can go, you know, 2 kilometres away and it's a different world. So that's what's happening in Perth at the moment. There are sort of isolated suburbs that have got areas of buying interest and activity, and other areas which are just absolutely languishing.
But so with the example that you gave, Gavin, just before, where one of the companies just bought a bunch of townhouses, newly built townhouses, yes, there is areas that will offer you good yield, but at the same time, with a risk of running into negative equity, I mean, maybe for the big corporations it doesn't matter that much. They're in for super long haul. Let's say it sounds like it's a deal for companies looking at high rent yields to fund the baby boomers or whatever you might call it, right? But for the average individual investor who's out there looking, they can get a good rent yield. But at the same time, am I understanding this right, that there's still a risk of negative equity in the near future?
Yeah, well, as it stands right now, the overall median price is falling in Perth, albeit that was, you know, if you went back 3 or 4 months, it was falling at a rate of about 0.6% per month. Today, it's falling at a rate of probably half that. So the rate of prices falling has slowed. But the reason that a company has gone out and bought 84 homes, they've bought outlying area homes, 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom homes on average, and they've bought them 30% below replacement cost. So, you know, why would you go and buy a large tract of land and split it up and try to sell it off when you can go and buy the product around the corner at 30% below replacement cost? And that's what they've basically said. They've said, well, we're crazy not to buy stock that we can buy below what we'd have to, you know, roll it out if we bought the Englobo prices, because the broadacre land prices have held up quite well. But there's still interest in those and they're still competitively bought. But the end prices are below replacement cost. So, you know, if it costs me $160,000 to get a block out of land, I can go a block of land out of the ground, I can go and buy a block around the corner at probably 130 or 120 even. So I think the company just said, well, we've got a reasonable yield, we're buying below replacement cost. Very difficult to get out of the ground, you know, at these prices. We'll just ride it back up to replacement cost with our yield as well.
So what are you expecting in the next 3 to 4 years out of this market? So short term, basically, 3 to 4.
Yeah. So Perth is selling below replacement cost at the moment. So you're not going to see a lot of supply come out until it lifts. The key for the West Australian market, for the Perth market particularly, is population growth. So you'll see pockets of confidence and surges of confidence. But until we actually see sustained population growth, you're not going to see prices turn around on a long-term basis, because it's just really shifting the same properties around in the same number of hands. And population growth at the moment is somewhere around about 24, 25,000, of which there's about 14,000 babies or so. So it's really very negligible. It was as high as 85,000 in the peak of the boom with a similar number of babies. So you can imagine how the extremes we've had there. And we're building about 17,000, 16,000, 17,000 dwellings at the moment, when really we probably only really need maybe closer to 10. So we've certainly been oversupplied. At current take-up rates, though, the oversupply would be taken up at current rates in 2 years. But I believe population growth will lift for a couple of different reasons. One being, I think our overseas student market has just started again through reclassifying Perth as a regional area and offering the visas to the overseas students. That switched off completely, so that will start again. We will see at some stage an increase in population growth driven by, you know, the mining construction projects which are underway and planned, and that's sort of just started, if you like. Our economy, at some stage, the West Australian government will spend some money because they've got projects in place that have got funds set aside, things like the Metronet project, which is all about train lines and increasing density around train areas, etc. So some of those projects will start, and that'll create employment as well. So, you know, I'd therefore say the two-year scenario would arguably be a worst-case scenario, on the basis that you can't pick the exact bottom of a market. People don't want to buy. If the values are going to fall, you're already buying below replacement cost, and you've got a pretty good yield to boot. You know, it's, you know, therefore you could argue that, well, I want to wait and see until prices start rising. But in some areas they have stopped falling and they're holding. So, you know, it's always about buying the right time. It's always about buying the right location or right position and paying the right price. You know, that's, you know, fundamentally, as we well know. And there are some things worth buying, but you've got to really be very careful at the moment. You just can't go and buy anything blindly. Probably in 2 years, you can probably go and buy anything blindly. But again, you know, why would you when you can, you know, it's always about what you buy, not what you pay, and buying exactly the right thing. So investors are still a bit gun-shy, and certainly in Western Australia, people are very gun-shy on property at the moment.
Right. And obviously the Trump trade war is another big impact on the WA market. If the trade war continues, that means China is a big one for WA.
Yeah.
That would surely have some serious impacts.
It would. I mean, we've just had it. The West Australian government's just had an absolute boom with revenue because the Vale projects, the iron ore projects in South America that were closed due to the, you know, the disaster, the catastrophe around the dam collapses, forced the iron ore price up significantly. And so that, you know, therefore we've seen on the share market the iron ore miners, you know, run very strongly over the last, you know, 12 months or so. And the West Australian government, you know, on the royalty side has had an unbelievable run as well, which is that's been on the positive side. But I think more than perhaps the overseas factors are actually the local supply and demand. I think you never want to get too far away from supply and demand factors, because property is really about local issues. And at the moment, we've got supply policies that are absolutely knocking it out of the park. We've got rezonings of local councils as we try and increase the density of Perth. We've got a great outer green belt going alive and well. We've got first home buyers being incentivised into buying new property but get no incentive for established property. So all that new demand in the market is getting incentivised, increasing housing supply, not increasing housing price. Very few overseas investors, and we've got the investor tax now at 7% being introduced. So we've got high supply policies which are doing really well, Metronet as well, and densities around there, but we just don't have the demand policies. So we've got a bit of policy imbalance at the moment, and so that's causing, you know, problems for the market. I think the demand will come through mining, and I think demand will come back through some education, and I think the educational side, which has left the state, and I think the demand will come back through just generally lifestyle and cheap prices. And people tend to say, well, look, I can sell that for $850 and go and buy the same thing in Perth or Western Australia for probably $450 as long as I can get a job. And as the employment market improves than it is, you'll find that that'll turn around and then we'll move from there, because everything will always go in cycles, as you well know.
Yep.
So we've been down for a fair while. I'd say we're sort of at the tail end of that. We've had two or three false starts. We had a big false start last year. At the start of last year in 2018, and then it sort of fell away with the Banking Royal Commission, caused a big problem for the Western Australian market, for the Perth market particularly. We've digested that, and unless something else is thrown at us, like the trade war impacting significantly, but they're long-term contracts, so I don't know if that'll really impact us in the short term, maybe longer term, but not short term. So I'd say most of the bad news is out there now.
In your 30 years of journey in this space, I haven't really checked the stats, but is the Perth cycle always sort of counter-cyclical to to more the eastern seaboard side, which is your Sydney and Melbourne?
Yeah, look, they do move closely. Normally it happens in Sydney first, and then you get this ripple effect and it moves out from there. Although, as I say, you know, local issues, property markets are really about local issues outside of, you know, the large factors like interest rates. But normally we follow the Sydney market. Now, we had that boom, that significant boom in, you know, sort of 2003 to 2007. And obviously Sydney and Melbourne have had the boom over the last couple of years, albeit the last year and a half or so has been a downswing. So, you know, what came first? Was it the Western Australian boom came first and then Sydney followed, or was Perth really playing catch up to the boom that happened in Sydney, you know, 5 years earlier in 2003? Who knows? But we generally operate in unison because the big factors affecting the overall Australian economy and interest rates normally move for the one market. And we've just been out of cycle this time because that commodity is booming in an extreme case. I'd argue that, you know, Sydney out of, and Melbourne particularly out of cycle as well because of the significant population growth. And if you took population growth out, we'd be in a per capita recession basically. So, you know, our commodities boom in Western Australia is probably the population growth boom in Sydney and Melbourne.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, Sydney and Melbourne certainly have enjoyed the population growth and obviously the employment and the infrastructure spending. So there were a few factors, but yeah, I get your point completely on that one. Whereas WA has been lacking a little bit due to various reasons that you've mentioned before. So your thoughts are basically 2 years, and hopefully this should start to turn again, if not earlier. Yes.
Well, you'll probably see it showing up in the stats some stage, probably 12 months out across the board. And by the time it gets there, I think, you know, normally, you know, things would have already been happening on the ground. Early cycle, you always tend to get a jump in values. It doesn't matter what capital city you're in. And it's mainly because demand can spike up and absorb the supply, and demand will spike up in 6 months. But the supply response time is probably more like 18 to 24 months. And 24 yeah. months if you're supplying through apartments, 18 months if you're supplying through perhaps house and land. So that 12 to 18-month period where there's an inability to supply the increase in demand is usually where you get that lift in prices of between 5 and 10%. And it's a classic of an early cycle jump. I've seen it happen two or three times now. And then we go into that long, slow, unspectacular growth. We certainly don't sort of go back to boom conditions. So that will come. And you kind of, as an investor, you want to get that early cycle lift because that sets you up for the sort of the next cycle and gives you that bit of equity. So you want to be, you know, a little bit early rather than a little bit late. Is what I've learned. And if you're going to be a little bit late, then you might sort of wait a bit longer. But certainly, I know Perth market is a high risk market because it's been down for a fair while. But the contrarian investor in me says, you know, I probably feel a lot more comfortable buying in Perth than perhaps, you know, Sydney, Melbourne at the moment, just given the run that it has been there. And if I'm looking at a 10-year cycle, you know, you've got to buy when everyone's sort of running for the exits and there's a high risk in the market, and there's a very good reason why you wouldn't buy. You know, it's a classic of the bottom of the market. And top of the market is classic when, you know, things are different now as we go through that phase from, you know, hope, relief, optimism into excitement, euphoria, before we go across the top into anxiety, denial and fear and panic, capitulation, despair, despondency. And the Perth market certainly is swinging between capitulation, despair, despondency and hope. So we're bouncing on that bottom, and we've been doing so for a couple of years now.
So, Gavin, in your opinion, what are the for those people who do want to enter the Perth market, what are some of the key indicators that people can look out for to see, to understand, or to start to understand that there is actually starting to swing up? You know, are there any recommended indicators such as unemployment rate, perhaps, or, you know, rental vacancy rate, which obviously at the moment is trending down? You know, what are some of the key indicators that you would recommend our listeners to check out or keep an eye out?
So, you know, you'd want to watch population growth. By the time you see that number, though, you would be 6 months late.
Right.
So, you know, I'd sort of look at that number, but by that stage you'd probably missed it. So that wouldn't be a lead indicator. That'd be a confirmation, if you like. Employment probably would be something similar. It's not so much the perhaps the employment rate, but the underemployment rate to watch in Western Australia. But again, by the time you see that trending, you could be a little bit late, but that would be an indicator before population growth, if you like. If you
want, so they're lag indicators, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. I just think you want to look at what's the replacement cost of that particular property, what's the yield that I can get on my capital, and what's my downside risk. So what would this property have sold for 12 months ago? And then how many have I got to choose from? And if I've got to choose from 25 of the same thing, I'm probably not a buyer. But if things are tightening up and I've only got a limited choice and my sales have increased, that's probably the best way that I look as a lead indicator. So what I've always found in markets that come off the top, prices continue to run higher on thin volumes and then sales drop off, but prices keep going up on thin volumes. That's a classic sign of a topping market. The classic sign of a bottoming market is you see sales spike up and then you see about 3 to 6 months later, you see prices follow it up. So I'd look for increase in sales activity, not necessarily across the board in the Perth market, but perhaps more localised in a particular area. And you think about it from a practical point of view, it's like driving around the area and seeing less for sale signs and more of them with under offer stickers on. And that sort of, you know, we all do it probably around our own suburbs that we know and we can get a feel for it. So that's probably, that sales activity is the best lead indicator I've found. As long as the property that I'm buying below replacement cost, my yield's strong, and I'm taking a long-term view. Obviously, if I'm looking for a capital growth property, I'm looking at something that's got rezoning potential or has been rezoned, mostly land value. If I'm looking at more income, I'm looking at a different type of property altogether. And I think if you're investing at a down point in the market, it's a shame to miss the opportunity of a capital growth type property, which are typically your development sites and your sites that nobody can make stack up or work at the moment, or development sites that are, they tend to get bid it up early in the cycle, but money because the land value moves first, not so much building costs move. So, you know, if and the last point, and I suppose, you know, what are the locals buying, you know, because sometimes you can move into another area of opportunity, but what you gain in timing opportunity, you lose in local knowledge. And so I always say, look, you know, I don't want to lose that ability and local knowledge. We all know, you know, suburbs and streets that just always tend to be tightly held and very sought after. So I always subscribe to, you know, position, location and timing. Location, location, location would have sent you broke in the last 10 years in Perth. And so I don't subscribe to that view. Position, location and timing. So we're somewhere around the right timing. You buy the right location, but within that location, you've got to buy the right position. Exactly. And that's where the local knowledge can really help out. So that could be using a broker or using a buying agent, using someone who perhaps has that local knowledge but is working for you ideally, not working for the person selling the property. And that can be the last piece in the puzzle that, you know, gets you exactly the right property.
Very good comments. Thank you, Kevin.
Just on the touching on the property valuation side a little bit, Gavin, since the boom cycle, what sort of drops have you seen? I mean, not taking the worst case scenario or the best case scenario, but on an average, what kind of drops have you seen in the real numbers with the properties that are not mining towns as such, but more closer to the city or which are more affluent suburbs?
So the average you would say would be somewhere around 20%, and be hard to get away from 20. That number. In the extremes though, I've seen 50. You can imagine your property value halving. That's in Perth. That's not in the northwest. Northwest, you can be up around 70 or 80% drop.
Right.
That's you can imagine what that does to your investing future. But in Perth, yeah, probably 50% would probably be the extreme number. Some area, everything's probably come off. You know, there'd be very little, if any, that's dodged the bullet. Minimum, I would have said, would be between 10 and 15. But generally speaking, 20, between 20 and 25% since the peak of the market. So you can imagine in real terms, though, that in real terms, that, you know, another 2% per annum, in real terms, that drop, a 20 to 25% drop, equates over that period of time equates more to a 40% plus in real terms drop in value. Because yeah. I remember, you know, at the peak of the market, I remember looking at a property in Cottesloe that was worth about $4 million. And I could have you know, taken that money from that property in Cottesloe and put it into Manly and Sydney and bought, you know, the same property roughly. And the property in Manly and Sydney, throwing a dart, might be somewhere around, you know, 7 or 8 now. And the property that if you stayed in Cottesloe would probably be worth, you know, between 3.5 and 4. So, you know, it's always about not just the drops in values, but the alternative investment or the opportunity costs lost. And so real terms, yeah, you're really talking about probably more like 40% plus.
Yeah, so it's really the opportunity cost that has been lost. Where in if you were in Sydney or Melbourne, you would have seen the prices gone up by 70-80% if you had that extra money to buy.
Absolutely. You would have taken your money out of because the Sydney market boomed in 2003.
Yeah.
You would have taken your money out of Sydney. You would have moved it to Perth from 2003 to 2008. You would have taken your money out of Perth in 2008. You would have moved it to Sydney, and you would have parked it in Sydney until about a year and a half ago.
Yeah, and that's really the benefits of rotating your money into different asset classes or diversifying essentially to get the best outcome. But obviously for that, you need to have a good understanding and be surrounded with the right people.
To create wealth, you know, Jazz, you know, if you stay in the market with everybody else, you create wealth at the same rate. Is that really creating wealth? But if you stay in the market as the market turns off, you also lose it. So it's about making it stick. To create wealth, you actually have to outperform the crowd. So that means that an additional risk, what is that risk for you? Is it loading up and then taking some off the table, or is it selling out completely and moving to a different market? But some way, if you want to really create wealth over and above the pack, you have to do something different to the pack. What is that? That's the challenge.
Yeah, that's really the golden point over there. If you follow the rat race, you will only get where everyone else gets. But if you wanna challenge it, then maybe now is the time to be buying in the Perth market because it's in the right in the downturn.
And yeah, well, I always love Lily Tomlin's comment. You know, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat.
that's a very good point, actually. Now, look, Gavin, that's really awesome insight into the WA market and with regards to the valuations of what's happened over there lately and what we are expecting to come in the future. So Gavin, moving away from the property space, going into the outer space and some other interesting stuff, aliens, believer or not?
Not.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Any particular reason?
Well, I believe in forces outside of the human forces, but I probably wouldn't refer them as aliens. I probably have beliefs out that there was probably more spiritual beliefs than aliens. So I don't know if that clarifies it.
Fair enough. AI, do you think it will take over humanity at some point?
Oh, fantastic opportunity, AI. It will really assist people's productivity. I see it as a great boom and a great opportunity for people to move from very mundane tasks to increase their productivity significantly, much the same as email and internet gave people an opportunity to increase their productivity. I'm a great fan of AI.
Yeah, but do you think it will get to the point where it will actually overrule humans or control humans to some extent?
No, I don't, because I think that humans will always have the emotional edge.
Right. Someone else said that as well. I don't remember who it was, but yeah. Crypto, believer, or do you think it's a fad?
It's a hot market, isn't it? up and down, roller coaster. You know, crypto for me is a speculator market, not an investment market. Believer, I would hope it is real. So mine is based on hope. I hope it's sustainable.
Right.
Because we are in a global marketplace and it's a great way to trade globally.
Definitely do agree on that. That's a really good point. And recession on the cards, do you think, in near future?
What, generally speaking, what I've found, it's only taken me three cycles to learn this. I'm a bit slower to learn the average person. People make money in bonuses, dividends, profits, wages. And what do? They buy a bigger house. So that's why you tend to see share markets and bonuses and profits and salaries and everything else rise first, and then housing runs at the end of a cycle, not the start of a cycle. So when you see the big housing markets of Australia running and running hard, you're at the end of a cycle, not the start of a cycle. Secondly, housing markets have got so much capital tied up in them. So we're between a $6 and $8 trillion market in Australia tied up in housing. If that comes off 10%, you lose $600 to $800 billion. That's effectively like a 25% drop or thereabouts in the superannuation pool or in the share market. And in dollar terms, that is the amount of dollars that are lost. And if you had a 25% drop in the share market, you'd be, you know, there'd be, you know, a world of pain. So, look, if a normal cycle prevails, we've had the Sydney and Melbourne housing markets run really strong. And if a normal cycle prevails, you would suggest that our chance of recession in Australia is now a lot higher than it was in times gone by, if a normal cycle prevails.
Right. That's a very interesting thought, actually. And what do you think will happen to the interest rates? They will drop further down to almost zero, the cash rate, or this is pretty much the bottom and we'll start seeing them trending upwards in future?
I mean, it's pure guesswork here, but my guess is that they want some powder dry. The interest rates are moving low because it's about global alignment and it's about the Australian dollar. So I think the interest rates will probably hold somewhere around where they are now, but the next move will be some form of helicopter money or bond buying program or some other form of stimulus for the Australian economy. That would be the next step, I would say. Federal government seems to be wedded to a surplus, and in a downswing, governments should be in deficits. In booms, governments should be in surpluses. We've got some fiscal stimulus that can be thrown at the market as well, and I think that'll be used. So my guess is it'll come out of monetary policy into some sort of fiscal policy.
Interesting. That's really interesting. Look, thanks for sharing your thoughts, Gavin. Do appreciate your time, and hopefully we'll bring you back at some point when the Perth market is starting to change a little bit, in whichever direction it goes. And to our listeners, hope you guys are enjoying the content. And if you are, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes or whatever app you're using, and let the word spread like fire. Spark your fire. Cheers, Jazz and David.
Thank you.
If you have any questions or feedback about today's episode, you can reach out to us through sparkyourfirepodcast@gmail.com. That's sparkyourfirepodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. Also, the content discussed in this episode is general in nature. Please seek specific advice from qualified professionals in regards to your personal situation.